Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation with John Marshall. John's the Assistant Administrator for Management in the U.S. Agency for International Development. Joining us in our conversation is Patty Fisher.
Hi, Paul. John, you spoke a little bit earlier about some of the exciting programs that you implement as part of AID, and I was wondering if you could expand a little bit more on what you're doing in Iraq.
Well, USAID is fully committed to providing humanitarian assistance to the people of Iraq, and we're also providing economic development assistance, but the first commitment is to saving lives and reducing suffering. We actually began planning and training for Iraq several months ago and took time over for several months to assemble the largest ever U.S.-led humanitarian rapid response team. We pre-positioned stockpiles of emergency supplies around the world and spent a lot of time coordinating the response planning with international humanitarian organizations and funding the preparations with private and nonprofit groups. Fortunately, as a result of all the work that's taken place and all the food relief effort that we've prepared and are now putting in place, the people of Iraq are not facing a humanitarian crisis. In fact, total spending on emergency relief and reconstruction to date is over $600 million, mostly emergency relief and the rest on reconstruction.
Wow. Did you learn a lot from the rebuilding of Afghanistan, and were these areas that you also assisted Afghanistan in developing?
Afghanistan, yes, has provided some lessons learned. It's been a largely a humanitarian effort in Afghanistan, helping the people recover from 24 years of conflict and 4 years of a very, very extreme drought. And our efforts to get food and relief supplies in, we believe, has averted famine for between 8 to 10 million Afghans. We spent a lot of investment in revitalizing agriculture, providing seeds and fertilizer for the spring wheat planting season last year that produced over 100,000 metric tons of wheat and benefiting over 140,000 farmers. This led to an 82% increase in production from the previous year. We also rehabilitated over 6,000 wells and irrigation canals, dams, reservoirs, and water systems, and reconstructed 31 bridges. That's just in the agricultural segment. In educational relief, we provided 15 million textbooks, 4,000 basic teacher training kits, food and salary supplements for teachers to enough for 50,000 teachers. And in the health sector, particularly in a tremendous amount of aid in maternal and child health, we provided over 4 million immunizations for children against measles. We've provided about one quarter of the water supply in Kabul, and we provided basic health services to some 2 million women and children.
Let's shift from the Mideast and return here to Washington and talk about things at USAID headquarters. I'm curious, we understand there's a reorganization taking place. Could you tell us about the reorganizations?
Sure. One of the first things that Administrator Andrew Natsios did when he took office nearly 2 years ago was, looking around the agency, he decided that he needed to make some changes to concentrate our programmatic and technical expertise in three organizations that would be the thematic policy major initiatives of the administration, and also to put more resources into the regions and out in the field where the rubber meets the road. And so he created three new, we call them pillar bureaus. They respond to the three pillar thematic areas of peace, prosperity, and health, or as we call them, democracy, conflict, and humanitarian assistance is one of the pillar bureaus. Economic growth, agriculture, and trade, EGAT, is the second, and global health is the third. And so the point of the reorganization was to focus, again, on program delivery in the field and to centralize the technical expertise in the three pillar bureaus I just mentioned, which were restructured in a way that's incented them to provide service to the field in a consultative way. The regional bureaus the four regional bureaus are still the main implementers, you might say, of our programs, and we have 70 some missions around the world that report up through the four regional bureaus. Then they are Latin America and the Caribbean, Africa, Europe and Eurasia, and Asia and the Near East. And as the restructuring took place. Again, resources were devolved from the what had been the central pillars into the regional pillars and out into the field to provide more expertise in the field and to set up a service customer relationship between the technical experts in the central bureaus and the implementers in the field.
So it sounds as though the outcomes that were expected were quicker decisions, more efficient use of the resources. Is that correct? And did those happen?
Those were among the objectives of the reorganization, and we do think that's starting to happen. The reorganization has just been was in the planning stages for a number of months, and it's getting into place this year, and we seem to be seeing some significant benefits through improved focus and faster decision making, and hopefully improved results in the field.
As you know, the President's management agenda is on top of everyone's mind these days, and as you described your responsibilities as the Assistant Administrator for Management, I heard many of the things that in the PMA that you're responsible for. I understand recently you participated in the National Policy Association's Forum on Human Capital. They brought together different people, different perspectives on human resources. And I'm curious, what did you learn from the forum, especially in talking to the people from the different sectors, government, the private sector, and the nonprofits?
Well, it was a fascinating and far-ranging discussion. And the interesting thing was, I think we all understood in the room together that we're all dealing with the same fundamental challenges. The issues aren't any different in the private sector as they are in the public sector. They're a little bit ahead of us, and in some areas they're quite a bit ahead of us. But you know, they have to deal with the three main areas of the human capital reform initiative of the president. Leadership, talent, and performance accountability are kind of the three thematic areas that the entire human capital initiative gets at. It's how do you identify and develop leadership? How do you achieve alignment between the leaders of your organization and the overall goals and objectives of your organization? And how does the leadership communicate that down through the ranks? How do you identify talent and get it aligned and with the right skills in the right place at the right time in your organization? How do you train more efficiently? How do you manage for performance accountability? And it's all a cyclical process. There's a life cycle process in the human capital system, and we need to get all of those components of the system in sync and operating efficiently. And you know, we're farther ahead in some areas than we are in others, but the same issues exist everywhere.
John, in March, the endowment published some specific recommendations stemming from that forum on human capital. Can you tell us those that you've adopted and how you're approaching implementing some of those recommendations?
Most of the recommendations are about 25 recommendations altogether, and they were very solid recommendations. And they were all very consistent with initiatives that we have underway that are part of our overall human capital reform initiative, strategic management of human capital initiative that's part of the president's management agenda. In three areas particularly that came out of the forum. First, on reforming the culture of the agency, a couple of recommendations that we felt were right on were the need to define our core competencies in context of the agency's mission. As the agency's mission is changing and evolving, we need to do a better job of defining core competencies that will support that mission. We need to strengthen workforce planning and better link workforce planning to the agency's mission and accountability system. So those are two cultural areas where we need to focus. Also on rethinking the concept of career, what it means to have a career at USAID. Workers in the government, you know, just like in the commercial sector, are more mobile these days. We can expect a career that would encompassing a number of different stages or moves throughout the career, mobility. So really the notion of an entitlement to lifelong commitment with the federal government is no longer a valid one, just as it's no longer the norm in the commercial sector. We need to see our workforce that way, and as we're constantly thinking through and revisiting what are the core competencies we need, and we need to invest, attract, and recruit and retain the competencies we need, we also need to recognize that there are some competencies we no longer need and make those tough decisions.
Are the human capital challenges at AID, or how are the human capital challenges at AID affected by the cuts that have been taking place that you described?
Well, it's created a background. There's a palpable sense in the culture at USAID that the agency took very severe cuts in the 1990s that were not based on a systematic analysis of the workforce and our needs, that they were fairly arbitrary and unfortunately left the agency pretty well cut, not just fat, but some bone and some muscle tissue. At the same time, our requirements have been growing. New missions have been added to the agency, unfunded mandates, you might say, and that we are increasingly strained just to keep up with the volume of work that we have, let alone take on new responsibilities. And the crucial ingredient to helping us change to manage the managed reforms and take on these new responsibilities that we lack is an increment of capacity to think and plan and execute a change strategy. And that's just what we don't have. We're so busy just answering the mail day to day that we don't have enough people who can step back and think and plan and change the way we're doing business. We're kind of like a car hurtling down the highway at 70 miles an hour, and we're having to change the tires while we're in motion, and we just can't get that done as effectively as we'd like to be able to.
That's a good stopping point. Come back in a few minutes. We continue our discussion about management with John Marshall of AID. How's AID doing with the rest of the issues called out in the president's management agenda? We'll ask John for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.